couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Hamilton on Disney Plus, The Outpost, 8 minutes and 46 seconds, Hannah Season 2, and a look back at the 1979 classic Alien. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring a look back at Grandma's Boy. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@themovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
First of all, I want to hit a couple rest in pieces. I haven't had a chance to bid adieu to Ian Holm, who is ironically in a movie that I'm covering this week, Alien, the original Alien. Ian Holm passed away a couple weeks ago, and he had such a long and illustrious career. He was such a fantastic actor that could play villainous, but could also play meek and mild. Obviously, most people remember him as Ash, at least in my circles, remember him as Ash from the Alien film. And also, I remember him as Bilbo Baggins in the Lord of the Rings movies, as the older version of Bilbo Baggins. But he's been in so many other movies. He shows up all the time. And he was such a great character actor. He was never somebody who they really built too many movies around, but he was always fantastic, and he was such a charm to see on screen. Sad to see him go. Another rest in peace goes to Joel Schumacher, who we lost just a couple weeks ago. He was a fantastic director, and even though he had his ups and downs, and later in his career, he was doing some, like, basically direct-to-video stuff. I mean, some of the stuff he did in the 80s, I mean, everything from, you know, he did some Brad Pack movies, but I remember him for stuff like Flatliners and The Lost Boys. You know, that stuff from the 80s and into the 90s, where he was doing thrillers, and he, again, those were working with sort of people from that Brat Pack group of kids. Of course, he got much maligned for his work on movies like the Batman and Robin films, like Batman Forever and putting nipples on the bat suit for Batman and Robin. And those movies are really a mess, but I don't necessarily blame him. He went where the studio wanted him to go with those. But Joel Schumacher was a fantastically talented director who did a lot of movies. Not all of them were great, but it was always neat to see him work. And then the final rest in peace goes to Carl Reiner, who died this week. He was 98, which is impressive on its own. But Carl Reiner was a legend in comedy. He is up there with Mel Brooks. The two of them came up together through their career on our shows, and of course doing the 2,000-Year-Old Man. But then as a director, Carl Reiner did some great stuff, you know, stuff like The Jerk. My favorite film of his is Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid with Steve Martin. That's a lesser-known one. That's where he intercuts a bunch of old films from the 40s together with a film noir detective movie. It's brilliantly done, and he was one of those old-school comedians. You don't get these anymore. And I even said this one with The Princess Bride, when I talked about that, which was directed by his son, Rob Reiner. But when I covered The Princess Bride last week, I said, you know, the characters, the group of actors that they had for The Princess Bride was that last of the sort of that gang of Vegas performers and stand-up comedians who were edgy in their own right, but they still were sort of that nightclub lounge act feel to them. And Carl Reiner, of course, had that the generation before with people like Sid Caesar and Mel Brooks, obviously. So it's sad to see him go. And I mean, he was active. I remember I was watching the TV show Parks and Recreation with my son, and he has a bit part in that in one of the episodes. So Carl Reiner was still doing work not too long ago. So all three of them will be missed. I wanted to have a chance to talk about them. Now, of course, a week can't go by without me talking about movie openings and movie release dates. I think the last time we spoke, they had just moved Tenet. But then, of course, Disney flinched. And right now we're in a game of chicken between Disney and Warner Brothers. Neither of them want to be the first one out of the gate. And neither of them want to be the one that's going to prove whether or not people can come back to the theater. So they've moved them into August. I have zero confidence that they're going to stick with that date, especially if the cases keep rising in some of the states right now. You know, of course, you've got New York that said they're not even going to think about opening stuff until August. You've got California, which is shut down again in a lot of ways, especially for movie theaters. And then Texas and Florida are having their own problems. Those are four of the most populous states in the country. You're not going to release a movie big enough that they're not ready for them yet. And they may not be ready in August. This thing might just keep getting pushed. And at this point, you're getting this pileup of movies that then you're going to need all the theaters and the multiplex. You can't just spread it out. So honestly, I think that for the most part, movies are a wash for the rest of 2020. I just don't see them being able to come back fully until there's either a vaccine or some sort of effective treatment that can be done if you get the disease and it kicks off and it can maybe, you know, and then we don't even know what the long-term effects are. So I still think that the movies are very much up in the air. The theaters, they can open all they want, but then you're also in this weird chicken or the egg situation where the studios don't want to put movies in movie theaters unless they know people are going to come, but people aren't going to come unless they put movies in the movie theater. So somebody's going to have to test it out first. And I don't think any of the studios want to test it out with a $200 million blockbuster. And if you have some crappy, what would otherwise be a direct-to-video movie, you know, like that Unhinged film, nobody's going to be able to point to that and say, see, that drew people out. And it might flop and it might just be because it's a crappy Russell Crowe movie. You never know. This is still in flux. I don't think it's going to be resolved anytime soon, sadly. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to hit is the Broken Hearts Gallery, which originally was supposed to be opening sometime this month, but now it's being pushed to August 7th, which may or may not stand. But this is the movie.
You can't have a good relationship because you're constantly mourning the old one. You keep something from every relationship.
At least get rid of the ex memorabilia. Do you see this tie? It's the only thing I have left from my last relationship.
Why didn't you leave it here?
A nail, perfectly placed. Yeah, look at that.
It's like art in a gallery.
Can I come in?
How did you get in here?
Your roommates. I want to show you something.
This map was here this morning?
Yep.
This is amazing. There are broken people out there like me. People who need to let go and move on.
This looks like one of those Gen Z romances. I don't know. I mean, it looks like it has some funny stuff to it, but it's trying to be almost like too edgy. It's very difficult to do sex comedy and romantic comedy at the same time. You kind of have to pick one or the other. And that's one of the problems with these movies is they say, well, we want to be a sex comedy, but we want to have a woman and be, you know, pro-sex. But then they stumble in all the problems because they're still dealing with the tropes of both of those, which are very traditional tropes. The sex comedy and the romantic comedy actually have very conservative traditional tropes, even though you wouldn't think so. But this looks like it's another one of those trying to kind of be the best of both worlds. The next one is Respect, which hits theaters at Christmas, maybe?
How many albums have you had?
Four.
And no hits. Honey, find the songs that move you. Until you do that, you ain't going nowhere.
R-E-S-P-E-C-T. Find out what it means to me. R-E-S-P-E-C-T. Sing, can't teach me.
Aretha, you do talk, don't you? Not just sing?
I like you to call me Miss Franklin.
You have to disturb the peace when you can't get no peace.
This one, of course, stars Jennifer Hudson as Aretha Franklin. It's a biopic. These tend to do well in award season. Will it be in theaters? I don't know. I'm certain they're going to do some sort of release for it because they want to get it in for award consideration, especially now. Now is the time. You're going to see this rush at the end of the year of people doing award films because the field just got very narrow this summer because there's not a lot of films coming out. And a lot of these smaller artistic films, the ones that are award bait, they don't tend to make tons and tons of money in the theaters to begin with. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if Respect keeps its release date. And if theaters aren't open, it'll go to on demand somehow. And that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Hamilton and 8 minutes and 46 seconds. to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews and kick things off with Hamilton. Disney Plus premieres a video recording of the 2016 performance of this award-winning musical about Alexander Hamilton.
The $10 founding father without a father got a lot farther by working a lot harder by being a lot smarter by being a self-starter daughter
to your union and the hope that you provide.
A little late to the table when it comes to Hamilton. Not that I wasn't aware of it. Like, here's the thing. My kids are in theater in high school. My oldest, who's graduated now, but in 2015, he was in high school and he was very involved in the high school theater. And my second son, who's 2 years younger than him, who's going to be a senior this year in whatever version of school that turns out to be, they're both into the theater experience. And in 2015, when Hamilton hit, it was a huge deal. Well, first of all, I'm not a big fan of hip-hop music. That's just not my thing. I don't like rap. That's just not something I've ever gotten into. So the idea of, oh, it's a rap version of Alexander Hamilton's life, and I'm like, eh, okay. And I mean, I heard some of the songs, because my kids played the soundtrack all the time. I got where it was going and I sort of got the style and I'm like, yeah, this, some of these are catchy, but I never sat down and listened to the entire soundtrack. But then I sort of learned who Lin-Manuel Miranda was because he started showing up in everything from Brooklyn Nine-Nine to doing the songs for Moana. And so I kind of back-ended into his talent, I guess you could say, where, you know, like I heard the songs in Moana and I go, these are clever. These are really good. This guy knows what he's doing. He's probably the closest you've gotten to somebody like Howard Ashman who could really kind of have some real fun with the lyrics in terms of like a Disney guy. And but I still never listened to Hamilton. I've never gone and seen it on Broadway. I've never gone and seen a performance either in a touring show or anything just because I don't get out to the theater much. The most times I go to the theater would be for when my kids would do stuff. But, you know, I swerved into some of the songs over the years. So this was essentially my first real introduction to Hamilton, even though I was aware of what it was and the sort of the purpose of it and casting people of color as these figures in history. And I think that's great. I think that's a really unique perspective. But I'm not the first one to say that. I'm really late to the party on this one. But when I found that they were going to do this, so it was in 2016, I think they videotaped 4 performances and then edited them together and to get this dynamically edited piece. It's a long way from, you know, back in the 80s where there was that one kid in high school whose dad was a little wealthier than somebody else and he bought a VCR camera and he set it up in the back of the theater and you get this blurry image, one static shot. It's not that. It is much more dynamic. And there have been movies that have been presented as filmed theatrical entertainment. I remember whatever that the sequel to Phantom of the Opera was. I once got the Blu-ray of that to review. And that was a filmed theater thing. And they'll do that with Fathom events and show operas. And I know that the Kenneth Branagh will do Shakespeare. So, I mean, it's interesting to watch this because they figured out how to shoot a stage play without making it look boring. And so that's more cinematography, but then you can capture the essence of what's going on the show. Now, I have to say, look, there's nothing I can say good or bad about Hamilton that's going to make people see it or not. But I have to say, I really did enjoy it. It does run a bit long. It's 2 hours and 40 minutes, and there's only like a 50-second intermission. So you're going to have to hit pause if you got to make a sandwich or go to the bathroom. But you are investing close to 3 hours in this, and that's because it's a Broadway musical, and those tend to run longer than your standard or 100-minute movies. Maybe when they adapt this into a full musical for the screen, they'll probably trim some things out and streamline it a bit. But one of the things that impressed me about this is it's essentially like an opera. It just goes and goes and goes. There's no dialogue. It just goes from song to song to song. At times, just interweaving. There's almost no break. And the only time I've seen that happen in a real popular musical was in Jesus Christ Superstar. That's one where you don't have any lines. It's all sung music. There is no book. You know, it's songs by Lin-Manuel Miranda, and that's it. And that's impressive, because to keep up that energy for 2.5 hours, not even just the cast keeping up that energy, but the energy of the writing and the performance and the cleverness of the lines, it's a feat. And I mean, there's a reason why this guy's kind of heralded as a modern musical genius. But I mean, Hamilton is great. It's worth seeing, and it's a lot cheaper than buying a Broadway ticket, but I don't think it's going to impact the Broadway show at all, because people still want to go see it. So I'm going to say, look, if you got Disney Plus, watch Hamilton this week. It's relevant to the time, in the birthplace of our nation. Definitely worth checking out. I'm going to have to say Hamilton rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next movie I want to talk about, well, it's not really a movie. It's 8:46. That is the Dave Chappelle special that he did after George Floyd's death. 8:46 meaning the amount of time the police were kneeling on George Floyd, the amount of time it took for him to die. There's no trailer for this because the movie itself, it's available for free on YouTube. And the movie itself is only about 25 to 30 minutes long. So it's not like a full-blown special, like a Netflix special. Like the Chappelle did one a couple months ago. That was a big Netflix special that a lot of people watched and commented on. But this one's a little bit different. Like I said, I don't have a trailer, but the description would be that Dave Chappelle offers his thoughts on the killing of George Floyd and what it means for the black community and people in general. This is unique because it's not exactly funny. This is unique because it's Dave Chappelle actually giving us his reaction. And it's also him explaining why he didn't have an immediate reaction in the press. And you can sit there and minimize it all you want and say rioters and violent protests, but that's minimal. You're talking about big social movements. You haven't seen this kind of a movement since the civil rights. And if you dismiss this as just people wanting anarchy, you're really missing the point. Chappelle makes some very solid points in this about why people are reacting the way they are now in particular and what the real issues are. One of the first things he does in there is he talks about surviving an earthquake. It lasted for like 30 seconds. Earthquakes don't last very long, but he said it lasted for like 30 seconds. He thought he was going to die. And then he goes on about saying how long 8 minutes and 46 seconds is. Try and hold your breath for 8 minutes. Heck, try to hold your breath for 1 minute. That's tough. 8 minutes and 46 seconds is a long amount of time. And I think he drills down to some very core issues with this. And I know there's people out there who love Dave Chappelle because he's not politically correct. But you know what? You can't praise that last special he did. Oh, because he says what's on his mind and I like him because he doesn't bow to political correctness, and then poo-poo this one. I think people should listen. You don't have to go watch the George Floyd video. Watch this one. I think it's worth seeing because he gives his perspective as an atypical political black man in America. So it's worth checking out because it's very different than anything else Dave Chappelle's ever done. I'm going to say it rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Outpost and Hannah Season 2. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about The Outpost. Rod Lurie adapts Jake Tapper's best-selling book about a battle in Afghanistan in which American soldiers defend an indefensible outpost.
Aren't we supposed to be on top of the mountain to win this thing?
Our job is to separate the Taliban the ordinary people.
We're gonna win by getting their hearts and minds.
We want their hearts and minds, and they want our blood and guts.
Every time they take a pot shot at us, they're figuring us out. When the big one comes, they'll have us dialed in.
The Taliban are here! Armaments are coming!
This comes out on VOD, so you can get it anytime. just wherever you get your VOD, whether you're getting it from Vudu or Amazon or iTunes or YouTube or Google or anywhere you get this, you can rent it. And while it's not a 4th of July movie, you know, like I talked about Hamilton previously. Hamilton, there's no like tentpole in the middle of the Hamilton production that says this is 4th of July, although they talk about the signing of the Declaration of Independence and that sort of thing. It's not hinged on that, but it sort of takes place all around that. The Outpost is not about the 4th of July, but it is a patriotic American movie, and it's about the American military. And military movies are popular on the 4th of July, even if, like, it's probably more appropriate for Veterans Day and or Memorial Day. This one is also apolitical. And I said that to somebody, and they said, oh, Jake Tapper being involved in a non-political project. Well, one of the things, you know, yeah, okay, yeah, Tapper has his political leanings, and he's not shy about letting people know those. But he also has great respect for the American military. If you go on his Twitter feed, especially on like Memorial Day, he will list fallen servicemen and just to give them the honor and the notoriety and the recognition without any sort of political attachments to it. He does the same thing for Veterans Day. He's a great admirer of the American military. And there's no politics about this because it's taken from the point of view of the soldier. The soldiers at this outpost, it doesn't matter what they think politically. It doesn't matter who they vote for. They're there to do the job as soldiers. They are there to be a piece of that chain of command, and they need to listen to their superiors and work as a unit. And when you're in the battlefield and when you are in the excrement, as they like to say, it doesn't matter what your politics are. You have to operate as a unit. And that's part of what this movie's about. It's also a very, at times, disturbing and powerful military action movie. Because the whole point is this outpost in Afghanistan, and it's the worst outpost ever. It's in this valley surrounded by mountains. There is no high ground. They are literally at the lowest point. And the only reason it took so long for this outpost to be overrun was because the Taliban was a little bit more of a ragtag thing at that point, and it was just a matter of time before they were going to go after them in large numbers. And all the technology in the world, you put yourself in a strategic position of weakness at that point. It's almost impossible to defend that. And it shows the chaos behind this. It shows the fact that, you know, if you're just the soldier out there, you don't understand the greater significance to why they're keeping that open, or the purpose of it, or why generals even want it there. You're just there to do your job, and you're not even there to question it. But it does show the chaos and the confusion and the, you know, questioning, why do you need this, and why would you put this outpost here, not at the top of a mountain? I understand top of a mountain's a little harder to bring supplies, but my God, at least at that point you have the high ground. It makes it very hard to defend when you're in the middle of a valley. But it's a well-done war piece. And like I said, it keeps the politics out. It also doesn't get too maudlin. I think that's a danger, especially in movies about the more recent wars, Afghanistan and Iraq. We're talking about 21st century wars. You get a lot of that can be overwrought. If you remember American Sniper, they address PTSD and they address the psychological problems that soldiers and military members have coming home from conflicts like that. But they didn't dwell on it. That's one of the things I loved about American Sniper. And I think they do that here as well. It certainly addresses the fact that this will take an emotional and psychological toll on the soldiers. But it doesn't make them all a bunch of weepy head cases that can barely put on their boots in the morning. And I think that's good because it shows the balance. Now, it's not a movie that has a big action stars in it. Orlando Bloom plays, I think he's a captain or something like that at one point. And he's fine in it. Scott Eastwood is kind of the anchor who's meant to be the good guy. And you know, I kind of blow hot and cold with Eastwood. I think Scott Eastwood has potential. His biggest obstacle is also the reason he's in movies. His biggest obstacle is he looks like his dad. I mean, like, exactly like a young Clint Eastwood. but he's not. And he doesn't have the same swagger. He doesn't have the same performance. He doesn't have the same delivery. And so he gets put in roles that a young Clint Eastwood would have been put in, but he's not a young Clint Eastwood. He's Scott Eastwood. And I think he's different. He needs to be not those roles, but you know, gosh, putting a guy, as a soldier in a war film, that seems like a no brainer if you had a young Clint Eastwood, but Scott Eastwood is not a young Clint Eastwood. So there are some wrinkles in it, but Rod Lurie does a fantastic job directing, especially, I mean, the siege on this outpost is, it's incredibly powerful and loud and violent, and it goes on for a long time. It's a big chunk of the movie, and it shows all the strategic problems with this place and why this place should never have existed in the first place. And it shows the heroism that the soldiers went through to defend themselves and each other. So I'm going to have to say The Outpost totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Hannah Season 2. Amazon's newest season of the international spy thriller follows Hannah as she uncovers the history behind the organization that made her.
It's not going to be like it was before. We're going to give you a new life.
They're perfectly refined military tools. When socialization is complete, all we have to do is flip a switch.
So you make up their names, the families, and the pretend lives?
Yes, I do.
Well, I already have a name. You know none of this is real. They're training you to kill people.
Hannah, you think you understand what's happening here, but you don't.
This is based on the Joe Wright film, Hannah, that starred Saoirse Ronan and Eric Bana and Cate Blanchett. This one, of course, it tells basically the same story, the super soldier. That was not a super soldier, but a girl that was meant to be a super soldier. That was developed as a super soldier. And how she escapes from this facility with her father, and he raises her, well, her father, I'm putting that in quotes. In the second season, you've got her on the run with another girl from this facility that she took, and Marielle Enos, who plays kind of the bad guy in the first season, she is a little more gray in this one, and she's trying to protect Hannah, but there's also a drawback to this group of girls that they're training to be assassins. Because, of course, there's nothing more stable and emotionally even keeled than a teenage girl. So let's give them all incredibly powerful killing forces. So that what could possibly go wrong? This is well done. I actually like this season a little bit better than the first season because it moves a little bit quicker and it's a little more, you know, it takes a while in that first season to kind of get into the meat of the background. It starts off with just this girl on the run. This one, you know more going in. You know there's a bigger conspiracy at foot, and it develops that more. It develops the backstory, and it also develops the inner workings of what they're doing with the girls. So I think that this is it's a neat show. It also doesn't spend forever world building. It jumps right in, which is always good because that's one of my big complaints about some modern TV series is they just spend their whole time world building and you're like, can we move on to something else? Anyways, I'm going to say Hannah Season 2 on Amazon kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about a vintage review of Alien and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Grandma's Boy. To Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr for our final segment. This week, it would have been a big week in movies had the coronavirus not taken place. It would have been a 4th of July weekend. Movies would open on the 1st. It would have been a huge box office. And I mean, the sun's out. It's beautiful. You get decent weather. It's hot, but you know, we don't have like monsoons coming through. We have a dust cloud coming through the country, but you know, that's minor compared to murder hornets and, you know, meth boars. So during this time, instead of talking about just the movies that are out, because there are a couple of them that are out, obviously Hamilton and The Outpost, I like to talk about some of the stuff that I'm just having to watch. Because I don't just watch new movies, although a lot of my time is spent doing that. There's time when I go back to my comfort food. And one of the movies I want to talk about today, weirdly prescient to what's going on right now, is Alien. Ridley Scott directs this intense film about a seemingly indestructible alien that attacks a small crew of a mining vessel.
Ash, can you see this?
I've never seen anything like it.
Let's get out of here.
If not this far, we must go on. We have to go on.
Wait a minute, this movement seems to have life.
Anyone who's listened to me for any length of time or knows me personally knows that I would do movie marathons with my kids. Now, we'll watch horror movies all day in the fall. In the spring, we'll watch all science fiction movies. And I used to. I haven't been doing it as much lately just because the kids have gotten older and they have their own lives to live. But, you know, 7-8 years ago, I would do whole-blown movie marathons. We once watched all the James Bond movies over the course of a week. We once watched all the Predator and Alien movies. We watched all the Star Trek movies during spring break. We did it with the Marvel movies. We've done all of these series, and it's been a big thing in my house, and we have a lot of fun doing it. Now, when I did the Alien and Predator movies, that was like 7 or 8 years ago. So my youngest, who's 12 now, he was way too young to even care about the Alien movies. And I said to him, I'm like, you know, you missed out on some of this stuff. So I want to show you these things. And yeah, you sit there and go, what are you doing showing a 12-year-old alien? It's violent. It's the Carr household. That's how it works. But I said, I want to show you Alien because it's an important movie. As somebody like me who does this for a living, doing the job of a film critic, you want to introduce your family to proper stuff. I've shown him a lot of movies that I say, this may not be the immediate one you want to sit down and watch, but you will learn about cinema. And there's so many pop culture references to it that it's important. You know, the chest burster, the face hugger, all these different things that go on in the Alien movies. It's worth checking out. So I sat him down one day and we watched Alien. And it's a movie I like to revisit periodically. It's one of my favorite sort of subgenres. I love horror movies on a spaceship. I love the idea of just being isolated and you can't go anywhere. Event Horizons, another great example of a great horror movie on a spaceship. There's one, I just showed this at our science fiction marathon, Life, the one with Jake Gyllenhaal and Ryan Reynolds, where you had this alien creature that grew and was very violent and aggressive that was on the space station. I love those secluded horror movies. They're a great genre. I know some that are terrible. Jason X. But I like the horror movies on a spaceship. And this one I think is fantastic. It's one of the best movies and it holds up. This movie is 41 years old. And with the exception of some graphics and some of the computer screens, it holds up. You could believe that this is actually happening. It's very slowly and deliberately paced, but it moves fast. Compared to something like Jaws, where Jaws, if you haven't seen Jaws in a while, watch that again. Because boy, that thing moves. That thing starts out and just boom, 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 boom. And I mean, before you know it, they're putting up signs to close the beaches. Alien takes its time, but it also shows the danger of breaking quarantine. Have we not seen that throughout the country? You know, I mean, with people who are ignoring public health advice and, you know, still having huge gatherings and then big surprise, it's a super spreader site. The ignoring of quarantines, even if it's something we just go, oh, but I want to see somebody. I want. And look what can happen. I mean, it's an absurd thing to compare the coronavirus to the alien in this movie, but it certainly feels really weird watching the scene where they're trying to bring Kane back on the ship and Ripley won't open the door because she says you can't break quarantine. Second you do that, you can infect everybody. And you're like, wow, that sounds familiar. Yikes. But still, whether or not you're during a pandemic, Alien is a fantastic movie. It's terrifying. It's chilling. It still works for what it is. And I would put it up against most other horror movies that are made today. So yeah, I'm going to have to say Alien totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's release is an old one. This is one of my guilty pleasure movies, and it's almost 20 years old. Traditionally, DVDs and Blu-rays, home cinema choices right before 4th of July are really terrible. Because if you're going to buy anything, you're going to buy it earlier. And no one is buying DVDs to watch during 4th of July on a normal year. So they normally don't schedule a lot of big releases on 4th of July. It's sort of like the leading up to Christmas. There's a lot of titles put out on DVD and Blu-ray. But then like that time between Christmas and New Year's, there's nothing new coming out. It's just the way the buying practices work. So I said, let's go back into the vault. Let's go find something that I like that's a good old-fashioned, funny movie. And I still have the DVD. It's one of the first DVDs I actually got to review. And it's Grandma's Boy. It's not my typical cup of tea, but hey, here you go. In this film, a video game tester struggles with the internal office shenanigans while he has to stay with his grandmother and her two roommates.
If you think video games fry your mind,
game over,
and make you stupid,
your bed is a car.
Yeah, but it's a sweet car.
You're lost.
I got evicted.
Timmy, any chance I can crash on your couch tonight?
This really cute chick said that I could sleep with her and her two crazy girlfriends.
You remember my grandson, Alex?
Hey, Sophie didn't die in the bed, did you?
No.
Good.
She fell out of bed and died right here.
First of all, I am not a fan of weed movies. I'm not a guy who's into pot. I have actually, confession here, I've never smoked pot. And you know why? I'm fat already. The last thing I need is to engage in something that's going to give me the munchies. I'd be the fattest guy at the movies if I started smoking pot because I would eat everything. So this is a health choice for me, but I've never been into stoner movies. Now that doesn't mean I don't find them funny. I mean, I think Cheech and Chong films, you know, Up and Spoke's a lot of fun. Even stuff like the Harold and Kumar movies, I think are very funny. Dude, Where's My Car is also very funny. Now these are all stoner movies. I'm not stoned when I'm watching them, but I can find the humor in them. Grandma's Boy's a huge stoner movie. I'll be the first to admit, because that's all they do all day is just smoke pot and play video games. Once you get past that, I find it wickedly funny. It is stupid, 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 but it's this weird sweet spot in the Happy Gilmore tradition where usually the Adam Sandler movies, some of the earlier stuff like Billy Madison and Happy Gilmore, where they get the company name from, those are funny movies. But as Adam Sandler went on, he became such a big star that I don't know what it was. There was less questioning on whether the story would work or be any good. And that's how you end up with crap like Grown Ups and Jack and Jill. And then there was like this low end of the Happy Gilmore stuff where you'd get like Nick Swardson he'd be the main feature in his own movie. You know, something like, what was that, Bucky Larson? Wasn't there that movie with Nick Swardson? And this was somewhere in the middle where suddenly they have Alan Covert, who's one of his writing team, is the anchor to this that nobody knows who he is. But this one just kind of clicked because it was very funny and absurd and silly. It's gross at times. It features a weirdly young Jonah Hill. Probably a part that he paid money to be in because, you know, gosh, who wouldn't if you see what happens with him in the movie. But I mean, it's funny. Linda Cardellini's in it as sort of the love interest, and she looks great. She's kind of at the height of her sexiness. You've got Joel David Moore. You know, he's from Bones. He plays the bad guy who's the video game developer who's really bizarre and weird and quirky and nobody likes him. Part of what this movie is, nobody cared that this movie was made. They weren't trying to impress anybody. They said, give us like $2 million, we'll make a crappy movie, and it might get the stoner crowd on DVD and VHS at the time. And it sort of clicked. It has some very funny moments. You got Doris Roberts playing the grandmother, and she's very funny. Shirley Jones playing one of the friends. So you got these good actors sort of mixed in this bunch because they don't have a whole lot going on in their careers. So I'm going to have to say, Grandma's Boy still, I have a soft spot for that movie. Even though you wouldn't think it would be my cup of tea, I'm going to have to say it rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
The releases that are out this week also include Force of Nature, A Dog's Courage, Orca the Killer Whale, Narrow Margin, Frankenstein and the Monster from Hell, and Scenes from a Class Struggle in Beverly Hills by Paul Bartel. And that's it for this week. I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about Greyhound and Palm Springs. Until then, have a great 4th of July and have a fat time at the movies or at home.